Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. This is Dr. Joe Sallustio back on the third episode here on the first day. Where am I, you might ask? Well, I'll tell you. I'm at Eleusian Live in San Antonio, Texas. There's going to be an eclipse.
It's going to be cool.
The speakers are amazing. There's people everywhere right now. And I have just been ambushed. I think it's an Eleusian takeover on this podcast episode by five Eleusian employees, engineers, CISOs. I don't know what they do. There's a lot of brain power here. I'm by far the dumbest person around the table, by far. I'm going to go around and I'm going to ask everybody to introduce themselves. I have an applause for each of these. So I'm going to go from left to right. Here we go. Who are you? Actually, my audience knows you. Go ahead.
They do.
Who are you?
It's good to see you again. I'm Sonia Khan. I am the VP of Mischief and Cookies at Eleusian, but my real title is VP of Innovation and Experience Design. Thank you for having us again and accepting this large party.
So happy to have you here. Sonia has been my co-host now two or three times, I think. So, but this time you're guesting. You're a guest this time, slash co-host. Well, you can do whatever you want, actually. All right, number two, here we go. Well, let's get the audience, get back going here.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. My name is Lacey Gerard. I am Sonia's hype woman, and I am a senior manager, experience design, and an adjunct faculty member.
Wow. All right. Well, welcome to your, this is your first, how many podcasts have you done before?
Approximately zero.
So this is your first podcast. It will be
first
unlike
timer.
Any that you do from this point on, I promise.
I'm so excited.
All right. Number three.
Hello. Hello.
A little bit closer to the mic. There
hello.
You go.
Hello. Also my first podcast like Lacey. So hi, I'm Jen Welding. I am a deputy general counsel, vice president, and chief compliance officer at Eleusian. So mind your P's and Q's.
I will do that. I will be very compliant around you, Jen. There we go. Number four.
Hi.
A little bit closer.
Yeah, hi. I'm Robert Levy, VP of engineering. I focus on our SaaS platform products and AI.
All right, and do you guys want to, as you talk into these microphones, this is okay. You got to be about 3 inches away from the top so we get what you're going to say. And number five, and final.
Hello, hello. Josh Sosnin, Chief Information Security Nerd, or like you said, CISO is the real title, and 0.0 podcast for me. But
actually, I don't have it right now, but I have a sound effect that says 0.0.
I thought you might.
Yeah, I didn't have it ready, so thanks for calling me out. You know, we're here, you guys, to talk about technology, compliance, ethical, AI. There's a lot going on in the space right now. For us that we don't understand how technology, I use AI because I'm that skilled. But what does that even mean? I use AI. How does it work? What are you doing with it? How do you make sure that it's compliant, that it's not going to give us wrong information? How do you embed it in products? I have so many questions. Lacey, I'm going to start with you just since you're directly across from me, because you said user experience, and so that's what I immediately go to is how does this work for me, and should I even know that it's behind the scenes, right?
There are so many great ways you can use AI in user experience design. One way we're seeing a lot of people use it is to kind of take the user research data that we have and generate insights from that. We also have a lot of human biases, and using AI to kind of come back up behind you and make sure that you've gotten all the relevant insights without leaving anything behind because you got really excited about one thing that you heard. So that's one way that we've been seeing it in UX. Of course, there's a lot of like crazy ways that people are using, you know, AI in design work. We're not really doing any of those right now. But yeah, in UX, it's great for kind of looking at our research and making sure we got everything.
Tell them like it is.
What's the group say about this? What's the group say about what Lacey said? User experience, user design with AI.
Yeah, I think the tools that are coming to the forefront around building user interfaces with AI are fantastic and very exciting, and we're seeing things like that in all kinds of spaces. When we're thinking about UX with AI, the most important thing to recognize is that AI is just based on probabilities. Right? It's a mathematical model trained on whatever data was plugged into it that's predicting the future. right? The next word a chatbot should put in a sentence, or the probability of a student being retained until next year. It's all based on probabilities. And that means that it's guaranteed to be wrong sometimes, which is something that is a challenge that we have to make sure we're accounting for in our user experiences.
It's fuzzy math.
But since you said it's math, I mean, for me, it's I don't understand that. I don't understand how is it math and probabilities. I mean, are we talking about it's that seems simple, right? Not that I would be. I'm not very good at math. I'm just going to put that out there. But it seems simple the way you describe it to the user. It seems much more complicated than that. Like, how is this doing this? And you know, whatever this is, there's so many thises that AI can do. How is it working? And is it all based on ones and zeros? That, you know, I mean, is it all come down to something like that?
Everything comes down to ones and zeros.
It's always about math.
Always ones and zeros. But it is fuzzy math. And how it actually works, how you get those ones and zeros, is going to depend on the use case, right? The way that ChatGPT is coming up with its ones and zeros to predict the words is very different from the way that we would use ones and zeros to predict whether or not someone's going to be retained at a school the following year.
You'd have to raise your hand.
Oh, sorry.
Sonia Khan, VP of Innovation, raise your hand. Like any good innovator does, right? No.
No, I was a guest. So I was told I was a guest, so I was only raising my hand.
Well, let's start the insanity.
Remember the year that ChatGPT started to hit the world? Robert and I were at a Christmas party with our boss, Mike Wolf, Chief Product and Technology Officer at Ellucian, shameless plug. And I remember showing Mike what ChatGPT was doing. And Robert, you were sitting right across from me. I remember you looking me in the eyes and like at my wide-eyed excitement for it and saying, Sonia, I promise you, it doesn't actually know anything. It's just predicting things. You can't trust it to actually do relevant work. It doesn't know anything.
Ah.
Yeah, it doesn't know anything. It is making predictions based on what it's seen in the past, but doesn't actually understand. And that's why it's so important that we're very thoughtful in how we use the right kinds of AI in the right use cases and have the right user experience to establish trust, and that we're following all of the regulations and best practices.
So when I think back to many, many years ago, first year college.
Many years ago.
I had to learn how not to fail out. So about the flip side of retaining, right? Is there a way that ultimately we can help students figure out? So for me, I learned that I need to sit in the front row of every single class I'm ever going to go to from now on. And I didn't even have the distractions of, you know, cell phones and other things. Can you imagine something that's also going to help the students prosper?
Yeah, 100%. And this is one of the things we're really excited about with our Insights platform, is we're bringing all kinds of data into one place. And once we have all that data in one place, we're able to have these very powerful predictive models to determine things like that. What advice should be given to a particular student? What types of engagement should be had? What are the right courses they should be taking? What's the right schedule for them? That can all be suggested and predicted by these models.
I like your style, dude.
I think students that are using AI are doing really creative things with it. I'm teaching a course right now, and there are four groups, and they were supposed to generate user scenarios over the past week. One group generated one, two groups generated three scenarios each, and then one group generated five. Guess which one used AI to help them with their homework? It was that one. So they were able to like really leverage the technology in order to like blow me out of the water with their homework. It was amazing. I was very pleased for them.
Was it good quality?
We're at an early stage of the design work in this part of the process, so it's okay that they did that. I did not, you know, I try not to look too closely at AI-generated wireframes, for example, because they're not going to be like all that great. But they needed to generate a lot of ideas and directions, and this was like the perfect time to use it.
So the killer app for AI is filling out all the HR forms and yearly reviews and self-evaluations. Is that it?
That is definitely one of the things it can help with.
Attorneys can use this like for briefs and stuff, right?
No, Josh is kidding. Look, I'm
surprised.
You know, I think that's why it's important for there to be a balance between the innovation and then, you know, knowing what the guardrails are, following, you know, keeping up with the legal regulations and laws all around the globe to understand and make sure that the use cases are all consistent with that and within the guidelines. Really, like, the who owns the data is kind of a big question that we grapple with AI applications. And so, you know, we've stood up a team at Ellucian. Robert's a big, you know, participant in that. We stood up a governance process because, look, we know it's huge. It's an innovation. We want to be part of it. We need to be part of it, and we are. But we want to make sure we're doing it in a way that is compliant, not,
you know,
using it to do HR reviews, Josh says.
I will say, yeah, don't listen to Josh on that
I
one.
Don't
listen on
listen
other
to
things
Josh.
That he talks about. But, but so schools, right, and because I work for one, and we woke up at one point earlier in the year and went, wait a minute, we don't have a policy around AI. Some executives are just plugging in financial data and, you know, sensitive information because it helps synthesize some of the things. But then your name, your institutional name's on it. You've just made all this information public. Now, if you look at the fine print in some of those programs, they own that information. It's like Facebook back in the day when you put up photos and now your photos are owned by somebody else. That's something that schools have to watch out for because it's really easy to go, oh, let's upload our financial data that is very sensitive that we don't want anybody to see, and all of a sudden now it's public, right?
Yeah, no, that's a great, you know, that was our, could be some corporate experiences too, or technology company experiences. You need to, you know, AI got out there and everyone was using it, and it was important to develop a policy, to educate everybody on what that policy is, to have a governance structure, to have guidelines so that, you know, we want to balance the innovation, but we want to be doing it in a good way.
Josh, is that a key for you? Like, I've got to clamp things down so information isn't going where it shouldn't be, but also have the balance of opening things up enough so that people want to use AI. It's a really fine line between how I use AI as somebody that doesn't understand really a lick of what all you are talking about. I just go, ooh, have you heard of this AI program? And I start plugging things into it versus student information versus organizational information. How do you find that balance between we're using AI and we can't do some of this stuff?
Yeah, we don't want to be the no fun police, but oftentimes we are, right? So here at Camp Have No Fun, the goal is to make sure that we can innovate and get some great features to customers and allow the customers and empower the customers to actually use them and not run into compliance issues and security issues.
Now, I recorded you. I told you earlier that I recorded you twice walking by because somebody said something about AI and uploading sensitive data, and I recorded you saying this.
Execute order 66.
I don't know what that means, but, you know, you're going to have to fill us in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so part of it is let's keep this secure so that bad things don't happen to your data, or so that there's some crazy stuff you can do playing around with prompts and getting large language models to do things that they're not intended to do. So that's certainly part of it. But then the other side is we need to make sure that the way that we're doing it as a company is going to allow our customers, wherever they might be throughout the world, to actually use the features based on whatever regulatory and compliance requirements they have there. So it's just, you know, we're really doing a lot around AI. I mean, we have partners like AWS and CrowdStrike that are doing some amazing stuff with AI on the security front that are helping us. But then there's just a lot of work we're doing to make sure that our products are going to be able to be consumed.
Yeah. We actually published our data ethics standards back in 2020, right before COVID hit. And in that we said, look, we need you to trust us with your data. And we are not going to use your data to benefit anyone other than you. Right. We published that in 2020, and we're sticking by it, and it's working.
Nailed it.
But the other thing I think it's important to recognize is AI isn't, in terms of data protection, AI doesn't change the game, right? Should you be sending sensitive data to a third party? No.
Yeah, right.
Right. The fact that the third party is doing really awesome, fun things, right? You get like, oh, but it's really fun. No, you still don't do that. That hasn't changed. But AI does introduce other types of risks around prompt injection. It's a whole new vector of security problems that can come from generative AI. If anybody, any of the nerds in the audience are familiar with SQL injection, prompt injection is basically the same thing, but fuzzier. And that can lead to all kinds of crazy things happening.
Do you think schools are, Lucy and partner schools, are looking to you all to help define what the landscape of AI is going to be for higher ed? You know, and as a person in an institution, I go, okay, who do I go to in higher ed to learn more about AI? Well, there's the companies like Lucian that are leading the way. You have access to tons of data. You are ed tech, right? So you're not burdened by the structures of higher education, because there are many and they are burdensome. So you can go out and do things that maybe a higher ed institution can't. What are schools asking you for at Ellucian?
Yeah, I think where Ellucian is unique is that we truly understand higher ed, whereas some of the other big players would be able to tell you how much power they have behind something. We have the experts at Ellucian who could tell you, let me show you ways that this could be ethically used to support retention. Or let me tell you other ways where we can check, potentially scan dialogue and tell you whether or not a student is showing signs of well-being issues. Like we can do things where we connect it to the real problems of higher ed, whereas I think other big players will just talk to you about power.
We did a survey of all of our customers recently, and that's published now, and it came back that everyone's very excited about AI. A bunch of them are using it, not using it in super complex, sophisticated ways yet, but they see the use cases, they want to get there, and the things that are holding them back are questions about how the heck does this actually work? I'd like to understand the software I'm deploying.
This is lunacy.
The concerns about the potential costs, and concerns about just the unknowns of the risks that are there. So we spend a good amount of time talking about what those risks are, because they're the same risks that we face when we're adopting AI internally, and sharing our best practices. Right? Mm-hmm. The reason you have such a big panel here, people coming from different disciplines, is because that's how we tackle these risks.
Yeah. Well, and it all comes back eventually to students. I'm looking at you, Lacey, because I go, there are still some faculty out there that are not. And I say that, like, still some faculty, like, people should be surprised. It's not surprising. There are very slow adopters, to the point where there's faculty out there going, if you use AI, you're just going to immediately fail my class. If you bring a calculator to the math class, you're going to fail math. Well, I mean, calculators, my six-year-old has a calculator, and he, you know, I mean, this is one of those times in our industry where there's a spectrum of adoption, right? There's an adoption, what do you call that? The adoption curve or whatever it is. But you can't stop the train here. I don't even think you can turn AI off if you wanted to at this point. It just doesn't turn off, right?
There's faculty members who have been teaching the same class for, you know, decades. And it is hard to change. Change is just difficult. But I try and use it. I mean, I'm kind of on my own as an adjunct. I have to make my own curriculum. I have to make all my own rubrics. I just have it get busy for me in ways that really save me time. Like, I do have it make my rubrics for me. I have it beef up my assignments when something isn't clear. I use it like kind of a shadow coworker because it's just me working from home. So I use it. I like run things past it. I'm like, hey, how can I make this better? I just use it as
you're
like
aiding it. So you have more time to actually serve the student, right?
I mean, yeah, spending time on things like writing rubrics is not how I want to spend my weekends. I have three kids. Like, I don't want to be writing rubrics all weekend. So I just use it to just try and, like, support me as a faculty member. And it works.
Well, what does this conference mean to you all here? What do you, when you guys go home at the end of this, I've asked this to the guests too, but for you all supporting schools, what does success look like at the end of this conference? How do you define whether this was successful for you, for Ellucian? I mean, so, it will be, but what are your takeaways? What are you hoping for?
I hope our customers see that we're innovating, that compared to a lot of our competitors, we have a crystal clear view as to what the ethical embracement of AI is, and that they see tangible things on our roadmap that are showcasing how we can do things like Lacey mentioned, which is use AI to supercharge their tools so that they can focus on student success.
Anybody else?
Yeah, as a success, we have a vision of the future we're executing on. We have been executing on. We have a lot of awesome things that are now available, and we want to see customers get excited about those things and start engaging and driving success with them.
Jen, you're looking for compliance.
Always. No, I mean, it's a great opportunity for us to get in front of customers, to talk to them, to Robert and Sonia's point, to show them our, you know, what we've got going on, what the tools are that are available to them so that they can really focus on student success.
Lacey? Success, what's it look like for you?
I just want to see all the cool new stuff that we're going to show.
New stuff. What it's all about. You got to have some
new
stuff.
That's what I'm excited about.
Epic.
Josh, wait for it.
I mean, the people who get super excited about security aren't exactly here, but there are some folks from a ton of different schools that I've worked with over the years where they do have compliance issues, and we've been able to help them. There's just been a never-ending wave of new compliance issues on the security side that they've had to comply with. And while we can't make you compliant, you know, our customers wish we could snap our finger and they become compliant, we do help them through features in our products. And we have, I would say, really gone to bat and delivered features in our products that have helped. And certainly in some areas where they would have had to do it on their own, but we've built it into our product. So just kind of talking to some of them, seeing how that's been going, and anything new that they've seen that we haven't heard about, it'll be great to just
I love that you're sarcastic about security. I love it, right? Because schools are getting nailed now. You don't have to go too many weeks out to know, oh, there was a breach in this higher ed institution. There's a breach in that higher ed institution. There's a real weakness in higher ed around security. And as the music turns up, here at Lucian Live, we're going to talk more and more. When I said security, the music came on. That's how much you should be paying attention to security in your institution. Guys, what an honor it was to have you in the podcast. I feel like why don't you guys come back at the on Wednesday or Tuesday night before I leave and just wrap it up for me. Like, did we hit all the things that you wanted to? What was the excitement like? You know, we can do a wrap-up episode. All five of you back. See if we can do it again. Now that you're loose, you're looser. We'll get you looser on the second one. Ladies and gentlemen, see if I can get it. Sonia, Lacey, Jen, Robert, and Josh, Lucian smart people. That's what I'll call you, the Lucian smart people. It's been an honor. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
thank
you.
You.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just ed-upped.